Welcome to another episode of the Babylon Podcast. I am Summer Brooks.
I am Tim Callender.
I'm Jeremy Heide.
Yeah, see, everybody steps up and moves forward. That's what happens when someone's absent. No, this week I get to be Tim Callender because I wasn't last week. And Summer unfortunately is unable to make her presence felt tonight, but she is here in spirit, if not in voice. So there we are. Guys, I think the first news, first order of business is finally, Walter Koenig, who we know and love as Bester on Babylon 5 and also had a minor role on another science fiction series.
Obscure Russian character.
Yeah, right, exactly. Nuclear Wessels.
Yeah, played a foreigner, I think.
He is now going to receive a star on the Hollywood Boulevard Walk of Fame or whatever they call it.
Yeah, Hollywood Walk of Fame.
Yep. The installation ceremony is scheduled for September 10th, 2012. And, if you can save up your pennies and make it there, you can do the thing. Now, having said all that, doing a little research, he is the last of the regular cast of the original Star Trek to get a star on the Walk of Fame. But he is also, surprisingly enough, not the first Babylon 5 alum to get a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
And there you can tell us who it is.
Well, I was going to see if anybody's going to guess.
Bruce?
No.
Not Bruce.
Not Bruce.
No clue. I got nothing.
Yep. Okay. How about you, Neil?
That was my guess, was Bruce.
Okay. No, it is actually, believe it or not, Theodore Baikle, who appeared as Rabbi Kozlov in TKO, and also played Lenon in The Beginning. But I think he had a star well before he did any of that because he has been around forever. His first role was actually in first film role was in The African Queen.
Wow.
Yeah. So, and he did win. I was trying to see. Did he win a nominated for an Oscar for I think The Defiant Ones. But he was in My Fair Lady. Did a whole host of other films. The Russians Are Coming, The Russians Are Coming, which I remember seeing that as a kid. But he was in he was even in Murder, She Wrote, which makes me think that maybe he had crossed paths with one J. Michael Straczynski. He also played Worf's adoptive father, Sergei Rozenko,
yes,
in Next Generation. So,
that's right.
Yeah.
So anyways, if you do a search for Walter Koenig and star on Hollywood, there you'll find the WalterKoenigSite.com page which talks about him getting his star. And there's apparently a Walter Koenig Star Celebration Gala Tribute and Convention that weekend. Saturday, September 8th through Monday, September 10th, the Beverly Garland Hotel, Universal Studios, Hollywood. And you can be, and admission runs from $20 for general admission per day to the Walter's Inner Circle package of $1,000 per person, early bird price before June 1st.
Ooh. Yes. And there's only 30 available, so snatch those up, guys. And, and snub at everybody's face. I think Walter would be happy to talk Babylon 5 with you as opposed to Star Trek. That would be my general sense of it.
I bet.
Yeah, and on that page they have the list of when the main Star Trek characters, actors got their stars. starting from Shatner in 83, then Nimoy 85, Roddenberry and T'Kai in 86, DeForest Kelly 91, Nichelle Nichols 92, and then James Doohan in 2004.
Wow. That's quite a jump from the one to the other.
Right.
Right, last few years. And they also have the press release for this with the full list of people getting a Walk of Fame, which includes Jennifer Aniston, Vin Diesel, Malcolm McDowell as
Ooh.
well, Matt Groening, Adam
Oh
West.
yeah, Matt Groening, Sure, yeah.
So Adam West there, and
How about Burt Ward? Does he have one?
probably not if Adam West is just getting his now. So
Wow.
anyway, so there's assorted other motion pictures, television, recording, and one radio person there.
Yeah, but Adam West got his for Family Guy, right?
One would think.
So it's a good group there. So the other bit of news that came across our email today was the notification from Babylon 5 Books that Echoes of All Our Conversations, Volume 2, is now being released and can be ordered right now, with the sale ending on Tuesday, April 17th. And this volume is signed by Bruce Boxleitner and features an interview with Bruce Boxleitner and Michael O'Hare from 1997.
Ooh, that one would be fun to read.
Yeah.
Well, that's an audio CD interview, is
Oh.
between those, that was recorded between seasons 4 and 5.
Wow.
So like there was a bonus, an audio interview in volume one with Andreas and Peter Jurassic. This time we've got Bruce and Michael here. So, and then there's lots of interviews going through, starting from 7th of December 1993 with Foundation Imaging people through Christy Marks in December 12th, 1995.
The B5 Scripts team knock it out of the park again.
Right. So, looks
And
like
how long
another good one.
is the discount good for?
Discount is good till April 17th, so probably only people here in the live feed will be able to grab that.
Right.
So, but and this time around, the Cafe Press coupons do work. So last time, none of the coupons that anybody could find online could also be applied to the book, but this time, coupons do work. So.
Good, good.
And those of us on the JMS scr who've gone to the JMS news page and the Scripps thread have posted coupons there in the thread about this.
Excellent. Thank you for that. Anything else, guys?
That sounds good for right now.
All right. Well, I say, let's go ahead and take a quick break, and then we'll come back and talk about next round of comics in Valen's name.
Is the long drive to work getting you down? Do you feel like the other drivers want to run you off the road and beat you with the tire iron of life? Relax. Take a break and let the fun of sci-fi news geeking ease your drive time woes. Slice of Sci-Fi. It's not as good as having a stormtrooper on your hood, but it's close.
Sliceofsci-fi.com.
And we are back to continue our discussion of the DC Comics runs of the Babylon 5 comic book. Tonight we're going to talk about In Valen's Name, which was a It was originally published, if I recall reading properly, in the UK before it was actually printed as a comic here in the United States. Neil, can you verify that?
I'm not. I know parts of it did come out in the Babylon 5 magazine, but I'm not sure when. Yes, actually, in the notes it says, yeah, on the Lurker's Guide it says it first appeared in the Babylon 5 magazine in the UK, and then right. It wasn't published standalone until 3 months later.
Right, got it.
So 3 months later, and it came out in January 1998.
And this one, from what I've been able to determine, is considered actually canon.
Right.
To the Babylon 5 universe, as opposed to the other comics that have been previously created.
I mean, a number of the other ones were also, especially the one, you know, the first one which JMS wrote, and I think the four part one with the shadows there, and probably, and of course the Psychor one, I would think as well.
Right.
But this one, the first issue JMS wrote, and then he then gave the plot on to Peter David for issues 2 and 3.
Right. Artists on that were Michael Collins with the pencils and David Roach with the inking jobs. Just as a quick synopsis, basically the story is that Babylon 4 once again reappears, although this time not through any spatial or temporal anomaly. It just sort of appears out in space with a distress beacon. Naturally, our heroes go to investigate Delenn Sheridan, Garibaldi, and Ivanova. They find Babylon 4 basically in the situation you would expect to find a station 1,000 years old and having gone through a war. Unfortunately, other people have made their presence known on the station as well, an alien race that nobody has encountered. And so in the process of trying to determine what the story of Babylon 4 was, they're also dealing with some interlopers who have come to basically keep our heroes from doing whatever as they need to do, because on top of all of that, the station is... the orbit is decaying and is about to crash to the planet below. As it turns out, Delenn discovers a recording made back during Valen's time from two other Minbari, one of whom was a religious caste member, the other who was a warrior caste, and they talk about serving Valen. And, of course, the religious caste member talks about the compassion that Valen showed for everyone, and the fact that he would weep for even the fallen enemies. The warrior, of course, was impressed with the fact that Valen's confidence spilled over to the Minbari, and where there were walls, he tore them down. Where there was disunity, he brought peoples and races together, and they defeated the shadows. But as it turns out, there's a third story in there, and it is, remember, T'Cha? Am I saying that right? I'm not saying that right.
No, I don't think they give pronunciation, but T'Cha.
It turns out they are a race that had sort of disappeared from the annals of history. They were one of the races in the first Shadow War 1,000 years ago. They followed Valen, but they saw Valen's teachings as not necessarily one of peace, but of one of warfare and of great glories of warfare. And then those races who would not follow Valen needed to be exterminated because they were not willing to, you know, if you weren't with us, you were against us was yes. Basically their credo. And Valen, upon hearing how they had committed genocide, cast them out from his alliances. Well, the race on board the derelict B4 happened to be the T'Cha as well, come to honor Valen as well they could in their own manner of speaking. when they discover that Delenn is the Delenn that Valen had spoke of, they realize that she was one of the Holies of Holies, and they get our heroes off the station before it plunges into the atmosphere of the planet below.
Right.
And then at the end of it all, there's one last recording from Valen Sinclair himself, where he talks about how history must be his judge. You know, he cannot speak for all he's accomplished. He still hears the cries of the dead and the dying. But he realizes that while he could change history by preventing the Earth-Minbari War, he also realizes that that would, if there was no Earth-Minbari War, there would be no Babylon 4, there would be no Babylon 5, and things would be quite different in the universe. So he sort of has to live with that. But at the end of it, he says, as for me, I've received my own reward because I've found her. At long last, I've found her. And that's the end.
Right. So,
go ahead, Neil. Sorry.
Yes. Yeah, so, I mean, that is Catherine Sakai, who he's found there. There was a slight typo in the text there, where he's addressing Catherine as one of the people there, but that was probably a misunderstanding by Peter David there, and he's referring to Catherine as the person who he's found.
Because I was going to say, because I read that, and if Catherine is a person that's addressed in there, then one would not think that the person, her that he found would be Catherine Sakai at that point. So what I hear you saying then is that's an error?
Yeah, that was okay. That was an error. I don't know if whether it was corrected in the trade paperback, but at least in the DC Comics, it was still there, an error. But apparently, JMS did state at some point or another that there was a mistake that he didn't catch.
Oh, because that does have significance. I mean, it's just like, okay, it's because right. that one of the things I wanted to bring up was the mystery of who her was, and to find out that it's a mistake. Oh man, what a bummer!
Right? Yeah. So at least somebody in a thread on the moderated news group said that JMS made clear in a post when the comic came out that Sinclair Valen was supposed to be alluding to her without mentioning her name, and thus reinforcing the letter Marcus gets from the two of them at the end of To Dream. But she says somehow Peter David got that wrong and put her name in there. So JMS probably, mentioned it in a note, and he just got confused there. So.
Yeah. So as far as the story goes, guys, just to the plot itself, what are your thoughts on this?
I mean, overall, it was a strong comic. There's a nice cliffhanger at the end of each of the two issues.
Uh huh.
So the first issue ends there with looks like they're about to decay there, and signal is received by Babylon 5. It'll take at least 36 standard hours for another ship to reach us, I know. And then, it's going to be a lot sooner than that for them to decay. And then at the end of the second one, the T'Cha's ships have just arrived, and they're looks like they're going to attack right there.
Right.
So it's two nice cliffhangers.
Yep. I think that the plot is it just in terms of the general story, it feels like a Babylon 5 story.
I agree.
Certainly.
And while on the one hand I'm generally not big for, how do I want to put this? I think War Without End was as much prequel as was definitely needed for the universe, but what was presented here in Valen's name, in Valen's name, how about that? also doesn't contradict anything that went on. I don't, it, it, in the comic itself, there's no major discrepancies in terms of technology or other items in the universe, as opposed to, say, Mirror Laser Star Web, which had all kinds of stuff in there that just didn't really feel like it was part of the B5 universe. So from that standpoint, it's strong. And in fact, in a lot of ways, I think of all the comics, this one would be the best to adapt as an actual episode. I could see a lot of this filmed, and I think it would work very well.
Yep.
I agree. So, I mean, it holds together strong, and we get a lot of nice background information there of things that were going on while Sinclair was veiling, which is nice.
Well, one thing I wish they would have expounded on more, or perhaps made a separate thing, is Zathras. Because they put a couple little hints and teasers in there, Zathras kind of being like, you know, a guardian or something there, and I would have liked to seen something from maybe a whole comic done from Zathras's side.
That would be pretty neat. Yeah, there's the scene where the warrior cast character. Let me see if I can find his name here, and I apologize that I couldn't.
Are you talking about Nuken?
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Nuken, I guess.
Nuken. He talks about going to approach Valen with news of great victory, and Zathras says, now is not good time, and he when Nuken... Yes, right. Yes, if Valen can listen to Zathras, you can listen to Zathras. And I should have realized if Valen the Minbar, not born of Minbar, he could be more than he appeared. Naturally, his helpmate would be as well. And I like that. I thought that was actually a nice touch because, you know, Zathras is one of those characters that I think there was – it's easy to say it this way. There was more than what he appeared. I mean, he comes off as a sort of comic relief, but it's not a Jar Jar Binks comic relief. You know, he has capabilities.
Smack him down. I mean, you never see Zathras any kind of aggression out of him, and then bam. Right. It's like, but it's not mean. He's just like, you know, nope, you're not coming in. You know,
right.
Cause, you cause can listen to Zathras.
Right.
Yeah, right. And after he does that, he says, come to Zathras and make you a snack.
Right, exactly. No malice. It's just, you know.
Right.
Not going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. And I like that. I thought that was a good scene. I thought that was a nice touch. And I think the two stories there with the Minbari contrasting, because the other part of that is the religious caste Minbari who, while he follows, I'm trying to find his
characters. Why don't the Minbari know more about
Rashak?
He might have been more known in their old texts.
Say that again, Jeremy. I didn't quite follow you.
Why wasn't Zathras more known to the Minbari as far as being in their old texts and stuff? I wonder.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. And Nuken is the religious caste, and Rashak is warrior caste. Vice versa. In Nuken's story, his son has joined the Anlashak and dies fighting the shadows. And Nuken basically calls into question his faith in Valen, which I liked because that's, you know, and at the end of it, so family is so important, at least to me, and the fact that that's where Nuken, who has this religious grounding where faith is greater and is supposed to hold you to a higher standard and keep your spirits aloft when things go wrong. The fact that he questions that, because what's really more important to him isn't his faith in Valen and following Valen, it's his family, and his son dies, and that calls into question everything. But then when Valen tells him, you know, your son should not have come to me, basically Valen is revealing himself to be a fallible god. And I thought that was very well portrayed.
Right. I mean, and he mentions, you know, his own personal experience there.
And then he does a little magic trick with the glass.
Yeah, you know what? And you know what? That occurred to me. It makes me wonder. You know, and New Kent says, "I don't know how he did it." Yeah, because New Kent is looking at a stained glass window portrait of Valen, and he takes his fighting pike and smashes it, and then Valen shows up and says, "Come walk with me," and they talk, and you know, and Valen talks about New Kent's son and how he was a gentle soul and a fragile soul, and souls like that aren't necessarily made to fight, but
right.
We took him anyways because that's part of what they honor in the Anlashak, and then when New Kent returns, there's right, well, right, exactly, and you couldn't, you know, if that's what he wanted, they weren't going to say no to him. But New Kent comes back to the temple, and there is a stained glass window of New Kent's son. And New Kent says, "I don't know how he did it. I don't know what the miracle is." So I'm looking at that. I'm thinking, you know what? There probably is. Valen / Sinclair. He didn't get just one letter in a box before he becomes Valen. He probably got a whole novel. He got a whole diary. So he probably said, "Okay, so it's April 11th. I need to commission some stained glass guys to make a portrait of this guy's son." And just stash it away, and at 2:00 they need to go install it.
Yeah. So, has to keep everything rolling.
Yeah, right. Exactly. He knows the timetable. You know, so it look. I mean, why not? I mean, if it's already, you know, the big miracles are the big ones because you know what's going to happen. Why not all the small ones too? Take advantage of it. So that was pretty good. I like the dialogue. I think the dialogue between all the Babylon 5 regular characters was strong. You know, obviously the first script being written by JMS and the other two by Peter David, who has experience writing for the show, that helps a lot.
Right.
I like the there's a bit in the landing bay in Babylon 4 where Garibaldi is trying to get some any ship started so that they could possibly escape, and he gets him in Bari Flyer going, and Sheridan asks him, "How'd you do that?" He says, "Percussive maintenance."
I love that. I use that term.
I have to remember it now. That's because it's brilliant.
It worked very well on the old tube stuff because tubes would always get loose.
Right.
Right. Still works on other stuff too, though.
If nothing else, you
cold solder joints.
Yeah, right. Exactly. So that was good. There was good stuff in there. The narrative bits that are in Ivanova's voice, I think, capture that character as well.
Well, she does the narration in the ins and outs too.
Right.
With you know, the appropriate wit.
Yep. So now we come to the next part of this, which is the art.
And
go ahead before I have my say.
Before you have your say, I think the art overall was stronger than overall in the main series. And the covers were all three of the covers are really nice. And the first two issues, the art's relatively strong. The third issue, it gets a little worse. Some of the pages are seem a bit sloppy in the third issue.
Right.
But there are a few pages there which are still seem strong. And I mean, it could be that the artists were just a bit more rushed in that third issue in getting originally whatever deadline they were on to get things together for the Babylon 5 magazine. That by the time they got there, they were up against the deadline and couldn't put as much care into it.
I think that's probably fair. I think there's a handful of things I noticed. I think for the most part, they get the character likenesses well done on a consistent basis.
Yes.
As opposed to the original run, where sometimes you weren't sure who you were looking at.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. Although everybody seems to have problems with Garibaldi, which I don't quite understand that. It seems to me he'd be the easiest one. Now, I know you're not doing caricatures, so that's part of it. I could tell you from my endeavors to do sketches and portraits of B5 characters, I find Bruce Boxleitner the hardest one to nail down, and they did a good job with him.
No, I think they did too.
In this
right.
One. I can see, I'm looking at the third one, I can see where the Garibaldi is, I don't know, too rough, I think, maybe. Maybe he made his face a little too rough.
Right, I mean, in the first issue, Garibaldi, at least in those first few pages, looks pretty much right on. But I guess later on.
No, they've got good likenesses of Delenn. The ones of Vale and Come and Go, there's some that are really good and really strong, and then others where they don't quite get it. And some of it, the inking style seems to change from element to element. I think the things where I really see it most is spaceships, especially from drawn from the show, like the White Star, Babylon for itself, some other elements have one particular style, but then the spaceships of the T'Cha are really
lacking.
That's a good way of putting it. I was gonna say more like, there's not
they
the same
like
kind of
Starfleet, old Starfleet shuttles from the original Star Trek with a couple legs on them.
Yeah, and then the mothership looks like a hot rod,
right?
Automobile fin stuck on it.
Yeah, so
you know, it's got a grill, it's got a windshield, it's kind of odd. It's like when the artists were left to their own devices, when they didn't have a model sheet to work from,
right?
It seems like they floundered.
That definitely seems to be the case.
They didn't fit in the B5 look, I think.
Right.
Which is really funny when you see them attacking something that does. You know, they look really out of place.
Yes,
right.
Exactly. I'm looking at a page here where Sheridan takes the flyer out, and he's surrounded by the T'Cha ships, and the flyer's kind of nicely rendered. B4 is nicely rendered, and then it's like
kangaroos.
Yeah, it's like wow. I would think if I had the opportunity, okay, now you get to do new spaceships for Babylon 5. Man, I would hope that I'd rise to the challenge, and it really doesn't seem like they rose to the challenge on
this.
Well,
you know, B5, most of the ships, even if they didn't have, even if they were Earth Alliance, there was still something kind of organic about them, something real.
And
these don't seem real. They just seem, I don't know, cookie cutter.
They're cartoony. I mean, let's say, I was going to say comic booky, but that's not really appropriate or fair. It's, you know, it's, yeah,
they just don't have any detail in them.
Yeah, right. That's another good. Exactly. That's exactly it, Neil. There's lacking the kind of detail that you're seeing on the source material. Now, having said that, one of the things I liked from the layout, I liked the portrayal of Nuken and Rashaan. Crap. Yeah, the for Nuken, all his panels, because it's sort of a flashback, everything is rounded and soft like you would expect for
and it has that border that ties everything together, and it's
right, and it's almost background. A stained glass window kind of thing.
Yes,
yeah,
it is. It's a very, I like that.
Right. And then for the other one, it's all angles and harsh, rigid lines, and that also sets off the idea of the warrior cast. And I thought that those were good.
Nice visual clues.
Yes.
In there. So.
Well, right.
I have a question. I'm not super big into comic books, but the first thing that I noticed was the different fonts reused, and I like that. I like the font, and it's interesting that the bubbles have the little jagged edges to them when they're talking through the comm.
Uh-huh.
And I've never really noticed that in a comic book before. I guess I'm used to old school stuff.
This was handled a little differently. Usually you see my experiences for like talking over walkie-talkies or communication system, you'd get much more jaggy sort of things going on for the word balloons. These are a little more geometric, but I like how it's portrayed that way.
When you know right away, but it's still easy to follow.
Right.
Yep. I would say, if anything, the one thing that I don't like is that for Ivanova's narration stuff, it's a font, it's a typeface as opposed to a hand lettered look. Now, granted, even at this point, some of this is already being done digitally. You know, you've got a comic book font, and I recognize the one for the Ta-Cha as, I want to say it's Space Pontiff, that I came across online somewhere, which is a cool, groovy font and makes you know that they're aliens and they're speaking a different alien language. And I liked that. I thought that was pretty cool. So it's kind of harsh to see that
terminal type.
Yeah. And it's actually Serpentine, which is used for the credits and titles for the show. And it's too harsh for what's going on here. You know, I think they could have found, well, maybe they couldn't have. This is still, I'm trying to see when this was published.
This was 98.
98. Yeah, I don't know how, there would have been something out there. I would have think they could have found something.
Well, or maybe they could have had her picture in the corner or something, just to soften it up a little bit.
So yeah, something.
You're relaying, you're seeing her image as opposed to just the text. Of course, I hear her voice, you know, when it's all the words, I hear her voice perfectly.
Oh, absolutely. And that's the writing, and that's kind of neat. You know, boom today, boom tomorrow.
Right.
She says in there, you know, it's that despair of, I should have known, you know. I never say it can't get any worse because it always does, you know, and that's kind of neat stuff. I like that. That really captures the essence of the character. I thought that was good. So
I do like the aliens, the drawings of the aliens, though. I do like that mandible looking weird
thing. Uh-huh.
I think that was done pretty well to be something new.
Yeah, and which is, you know, one of the nice things with comics, you can do something completely different.
You don't have to put somebody's
head into it.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, overall, I think it's a strong entry. I think they do some good things with the comic medium, but I think in many ways they also are limited by that medium.
As far as
some of the things, like there's the sort of recurring bit with Rorschach, where he and Valen are about to fly out on a mission to fight the shadows, and Valen gives him the thumbs up, you know, the human thumbs up thing, and Rorschach kind of picks up. And then later on, when Valen is mourning all the deaths, you know, he brings that back, and that's the kind of thing that I think works well with actors doing it, but it doesn't.
You don't get
the
same feeling.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. And it, for that kind of thing to work, it takes an extraordinary, just an extraordinary book to make that work. Like Watchmen has stuff like that in it, and it works. But that's that whole thing. I mean, you can't necessarily compare every comic to that, because that sort of stands head and shoulders above everything else.
Maybe it's not portraying the chemistry as well as it should.
Yes, that's a good That's a good way to put it. There, you can't portray that kind of chemistry that you get with actors working against each other. So that I think that's one of the places where the comic medium becomes a limitation.
Though one other note in the story, which is nice. In there, in the third issue, with Valen talking to one of the Tuck Shaw, and he's talking to them and saying to Zarwin, "What would you do, Zarwin, if you knew of a great war to come, one that would be caused by misunderstanding, and you had the power, your power within your power to prevent the war, but dared not?" And so
Yes, well, and
he
then
poses that there, referring in his mind to, the Earth Mimbari War, and then that, the legend is passed on to the present time where they see Delenn and boom, they have this legend there and they stop the war,
right.
possible war between them.
Well, here's what's interesting is that Zarwin, when Valen tells him that, what would you do to prevent this? And, but you dare not. And Zarwin says, I don't understand. Why would you want to stop a war? Because
Right.
isn't that one of the great glories is to go and fight and die? Glory is found in war. There's no greater death than one found in battle on behalf of a greater cause. Why would you wish to deny anyone that wondrous means of departing the sphere? And Balin says, Zarin, where did you come up with that belief? He says, why, from your teachings, great one.
The extension of your logic.
Right, exactly. And then he Valen says, I find it interesting what different people take away from my teaching. Space may exist in a vacuum, but the things I say obviously do not. So, yeah.
Well,
That, so, and I like that. I think that's worthy. That's the kind of writing that's worthy of the Babylon 5 universe.
yeah. There's
right.
always a undercurrent of politics.
And the fact that there are no absolutes.
Right.
Everybody has their interpretations, and everybody takes away what they want to hear. And one of the great causes of conflict, and that's one of the themes I think in the show itself, is that there aren't any bad guys. People come into conflict because everybody is doing what they think is right.
Right. Nobody does it on purpose to be, "Oh, I'm evil." Ha ha ha.
Right, exactly. Bester, his flaw is that in his mind the ends justify the means, but by the same token he's doing it for, in his mind, a greater good. It's for the telepaths. We're the next level of
Human evolution.
human evolution,
Right.
right? Exactly,
So if humans are
and
going to survive, telepaths need to survive.
exactly. And the scene with Justin and Morden and Anna and Sheridan on Zahadum, and they tell him, well, look, for thousands of years, you can't have progress without conflict. You got to kick over the anthills. That's how things get moving. And you believe them because they believe it. And here in this with Zarwin is another example of that. And I thought that was well handled. And in fact, the T'Cha are hanging around on Babylon 4 not because they're raiders or looters. It's just they recognize this also as a holy of holies.
Right, they're doing it for the good.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that's another one of those things that comes off
Well, it did.
really well.
I one thing they didn't say, were they just erased from their history altogether?
They did mention that it was a race nobody had seen, and one. God, I have to go back through here. Delenn talks about as she's looking at the records, a race that they'd never seen before, the T'Cha, and I think there's some mention of them being expunged from the records, but I also wonder if that they don't. This is the implication. Is that because Valen expelled them from the Alliance that I can
Right.
see other Minbari going along, well, we're going to expunge them from the records as well. Valen has rejected them, so we're going
Right. They're
to
doing the same thing, basically. It's taking it to
Right,
an extreme.
exactly.
So.
Which is, again, the theme there, taking things to the extreme.
Right. So they were given a message to Delenn in the far future for their people to hold so a great misunderstanding can be avoided. And they just sequestered themselves until they could deliver it.
Yeah.
Right. But they never lost the faith, right? I mean, yeah. they always still wanted to have redemption.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, they just okay, well, if we can't be part of it, we're just going to hide out.
So that was there's a good 3-issue series there, and it was very strong, nice keeping the story alive.
Yeah, I think it also does a good job of working within established canon, not violating anything that went on in it, and it pretty much avoids the one problem that I have with a lot of these ancillary pieces, the books, the comics, is that if these are events that are slotted into particular points in the Babylon 5 timeline, you would think that somebody would mention it somewhere down the line. Yeah, remember that time we went back to Babylon 4? You know, it's one of the issues I have within the beginning.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, this is sort of that retconning kind of thing. Right. And this kind of avoids a lot of those issues.
No,
and
yeah,
so,
it kind of fills in without having to change anything at all, really.
Right, exactly. And for us to say, okay, well, you know, we never hear of it during the show at any other point, so why should I accept this as being an actual adventure? So, yeah, so I think that it does a good job with that.
Well, yeah, because we also saw everything from basically Earth's point of view, human's point of view.
Yeah.
And if we'd seen it from Umbari's point of view, that might have been something that had been, you know, it might have been a different story altogether. Because, you know, you would see it differently.
Right.
Yes, exactly. All right, any other thoughts, guys?
Nope, I think that's covered quite well.
Excellent. Very good. All right. Well, why don't we go ahead and take a quick break, and then we'll come back. I've got an email for us, and I'll read that.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, no.
Yo, yo, yo.
Oh, no, you didn't.
Sucker tried to play me, but you never paid me, never.
Oh no, you didn't.
Payback is a coming, you will be running forever.
Oh no, you didn't.
Until I get my vengeance, I will never end this mayhem.
Oh no, you didn't.
I'm a mercenary, you ain't got a prayer, you owe me.
And we are back to close this up. We got a couple things. Neil has a little bit of information to share with us from the Bruce Boxleitner corner of the universe.
Yeah, Bruce Boxleitner apparently has been tweeting for about a month now, and he's relatively active. He's got 611 tweets so far, and even just now in the last half hour, he mentioned that he's currently appearing in ABC's GCB. And the show is so much fun, and he loves what's going on there. And that also he has the animated Tron Uprising premiering in June. So this is a new animated TV series that's he's going to be the voice of Tron in there. And Elijah Wood is the voice of Beck. Mandy Moore is the voice of Mara, and Emmanuel Creaky is the voice of Paige there, and Lance Henriksen is General Tesla. Paul Rubens, voice of Pavel, and
Paul Rubens, huh?
Yeah, Paul Rubens there. So they've got
you can't do that with the program.
They've got a full cast, and that should be apparently starting in June.
Cool. That's kind of neat. There's a lot of neat stuff going on the animated front. I think we're seeing a golden age or a silver age, anyways, where there's some interesting storytelling happening.
And that's on Disney's Disney XD channel in the U.S. That's supposed to be coming out. A 10-part series.
Very cool. Very cool. All right, I got an email here I want to close out with. This comes to us from Niall. He says, hello, I've been an infrequent listener since 2007. He says, I have a simple question for you, but I don't even see the question now that I look at this. Anyways, he goes on to write, at the end of your end-of-the-line review, you mentioned all the other B5 forms of media you will be covering, yet you missed one of them, the video games, or rather the canceled Space Combat Simulator. I'm curious to know if you will cover the topic of the video game in a later podcast. Since the soundtrack was released, gameplay footage does exist, yet the live-action footage has been lost. I'm also curious to know if you will talk about the fan-created video games. Most importantly, Babylon 5, I found her. The completely original free-to-download Babylon 5 game, which has its own unique, highly realistic physics engines, which is sadly the reason why I can never play I Found Her. Inertia is a bitch. And the Babylon Project, the total conversion standalone modification of Free Space 2, which can also be downloaded for free. I know that many of the Babylon 5 modding projects have been left unfinished, and I know that even to this day, new Babylon 5 mods are being produced, such as the X3 mod. Well, Niall, I have to tell you, I'm not really a gamer person. I went to the I Found Her website, and I went out there when I first found out about it 3 or 4 years ago and went back here recently. It doesn't really look like there's a whole lot of activity going on there, but if somebody knows otherwise, feel free to let us know. And I don't know, it's interesting, the reason I wanted to read this email here is because Niall talks about the Babylon 5 I Found Her game, and I'm wondering if they had the same confusion that we had reading the comic, if the I Found Her means something completely different. So I'm curious to know if anybody has any information about that. And there was the Sierra Games combat simulator, and yes, there is music for that running around someplace, and I've seen the footage for that. It was just sort of a teaser footage, which looked pretty good. It was Star Fury fighting Raiders, and that was the end of it. It got canceled.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of Free Space 2, and I have played the conversion, but I just kept getting lost in hyperspace, so I don't really know what
you
the
keep
game
falling
is
off the
so
beacon.
Much. Yeah, I can't. I don't know how to follow the beacon, so
yeah,
maybe that's
the, yeah.
Maybe
this
that's
is
what the game is.
Right. Yeah. I hadn't never heard the I Found Her, but I just looked up the the website there, and they've got some nice screenshots on one page, and they apparently have some they have a 7.5 megabyte download of a trailer for it, and some interesting things on the webpage there to at least look around there.
Neil, if you're looking at, do you get the impression that it's Russian or Eastern European in origin?
It's .ru.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go. Then.
In there. So
then I was right.
Yep. they all love Ivanova.
Well, who doesn't?
Well, yeah.
Okay. So that's that for this. Anybody else got anything before we close out?
Nope.
Nothing.
Oh, crap.
What?
Okay, here's the part where Summer says all the summary parts of things about sending us an email at
babylonpodcast@gmail.com.
That there's forums over at some place that there's stuff going on.
And you can call the voicemail at 206-338-2259. That's 206-338-2259.
That's the year that Neil saved my bacon from trying to remember that phone number.
And we'll see you all on the other side of the gate.
Boogie boogie.
Sorry. Dude.
You got boogie boogie in my shawarma. I'm not very happy, sir.